is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenated radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 165 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sinflow of sadism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Is it working, MK and Dobby? Can you feel it? I mean, MK and Ben Stone. I'm so used to MK and Dobby. MK, Lords, and Ben Stone,
I'm
the Bad Quaker.
Feeling it.
You feel it? You feel it, Ben?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feel it.
And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. The BIPCOT no gov license allows reuse of any of our shows in any capacity for commercial or non-commercial use by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. Now, this is a license that we've come up with, and I'm kind of playing this as a parody of a couple things. I'm reciting it as a parody of a couple things. One is, okay, if people listening don't know, most of the people on this show, I'm not going to speak collectively, but I'm pretty sure all three of us, we do not like the idea of intellectual property laws, copyright, trademark, and patent. Would you agree you don't like those things, people?
That is correct, sir.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah. A trademark, you know, it's fraud if someone claims to be you and put out a product that they claim to come from you. But I think that could be dealt with without governments, because you could put I have a plan that you could put a blockchain-based individual provable over the blockchain, over your smartphone hologram cheaply on any product, and prove by waving your phone on it and checking that it actually came from who it came from. And, you know, people would still sell the fake Rolex watch, but you'd know it's fake and you wouldn't buy it thinking it's real. So,
well, you could have proof of publishing on the blockchain. So if you came up with an idea, you put it into the blockchain and say, well, you know, I published this idea at this time. It's in there. Yep. So if you're really...
And you can do that on any blockchain. When we say the blockchain, we mean the concept of the blockchain, not necessarily the Bitcoin or Namecoin blockchain. There will be many more blockchains. Really, not a lot of them have done much except Bitcoin. Like, Namecoin is the only one that's really sort of adopted that does anything different than being a clone of Bitcoin. Would you say that's true? You know more about it than I do, MK.
Yeah, but I still think Bitcoin is going to be the predominant blockchain. I haven't seen a whole lot of other ones that come very close, at least to the scale of popularity. And Bitcoin definitely has that, you know, first to the market advantage. I think most people recognize that more. They haven't heard of the other altcoins, and I even have trouble keeping up with the other kind of Bitcoin 2.0 projects, things like that. So I think Bitcoin is probably going to end up being one, but, you know, things could change.
I
hope something comes out that's better. You know, I think for a while, Bitcoin may be the predominant one. And then if something better comes along, I think we'll see that. And I like this in general. So, you know, I'm okay with whatever happens. And I think it can be improved upon.
Yeah. And that was not a dropout from Fiendphone. That was me hitting the wrong button trying to turn you down, because for some reason, your volume keeps going back up. I turn it down and it keeps going back up. And this is a moving sidewalk of technology, of us building the roads, and, you know, it's all still in beta, the Fiend phones. Yeah, so I don't know that it's necessarily going to be everything on the blockchain of Bitcoin, because Namecoin, which, you know, was a great idea. It was decentralized DNS registration over an alternate coin, an alternate cryptocurrency, was kind of a proof of concept of why there's a problem of stuffing a bunch of information onto a blockchain. First of all, it's pretty hard to actually put anything on the Bitcoin blockchain unless you are mining it. You can't really put text in there, right?
I think you can put text in there now.
You can put text in a transaction with the wallet, and it shows up in blockchain.info, but it only shows up in blockchain.info. It's not really on the blockchain of Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, there are some limitations with data, as far as I know.
But the problem that Namecoin proved, and Namecoin doesn't allow a lot of characters put in there. It's not much longer than what you can put in a Twitter tweet. But the blockchain is already, like, you know, many, many gigabytes. So basically, if anybody can easily, without paying much of the coin, put a bunch of text in there, it's just got a bunch of people basically parking things for later use. And there's ways around that. But really, like, Bitcoin is not the place that you want to put your contracts into the blockchain, is what I'm saying. You could already prove first authorship, though, by putting something in the text of the Namecoin blockchain. That's pretty easy to do. It's built into the wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, I think a lot of things that maybe don't catch on now are probably going to catch on later as people learn more about this technology in general. So yeah. Maybe, you know, Namecoin is a great idea. Maybe just it didn't get wide adoption because people aren't that familiar with the general concept. And until that happens, you know, I think some of these other projects that are really ambitious and really good ideas in the long run, maybe they're going to have some trouble getting started.
Yeah. And, you know, I think someone will do distributed DNS on a blockchain. I don't think it's going to be Namecoin, though. I think Namecoin's been around 3 years and it's full of, you know, it's got hundreds of thousands of parked domains and very few actually working domains to the point where the blockchain is like too unwieldy already, and nobody's really using it for anything. And we tried, Derek and I tried, we came up with MeowBit, which was a, it was the first system-wide, you know, resolver for .bit domains for Windows. And it didn't really catch on much because people, I think, first of all, there's problems with the wallet. It's really clunky. It takes 10 minutes to open. The developers have spent a lot of time trying to put other, basically like they should be rebuilding the engine of the car instead of putting a lot of bumper stickers on it is the way I would put it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really like the wallet is so clunky. They should have just rebuilt the wallet before they tried to put all these other functions into the protocol. But also just adoption. Like I think most people are far more interested in chirping about the problems of the government might be taking away our internets than actually, you know, taking 10 minutes to do something to make their own domain drone proof.
Right. And I kind of go back and forth on this because I kind of am of the mindset that maybe this technology isn't for everyone. Maybe it's not for the people who don't want to put in the time to learn about it. But at the same time, you're not going to get to that level of mass adoption unless it's easy to use. People are very impatient. You know, they're not going to wait 10 minutes for something to open. You know, if it doesn't happen immediately, then they're not going to use it. And that's what's great about setting up a Bitcoin wallet with someone is it takes seconds. You know, you just you show them, you send it. It's fast. It's easy to use. And that's what people want. Ultimately, it's much harder to change people's bad habits so they do what they should do instead of just adapting the technology to fit those bad as they are habits.
Whereas the second software that Derek and I have come up with, FiendPhone, we're actually using right now to talk over. It's better than Skype. It's for podcasters and radio people. It's free. You can go to fiendphone.com. But it doesn't have as wide a, it's only been out, it's not even out of beta, and it's only been out about a month. And, you know, it does take a little work. It takes less work than setting up .bit domain. You have to actually forward a port, which most people don't know how to do and aren't willing to take the time to do. But it's pretty standard operating procedure with any, you know, voice over internet, radio, like hardware, like a Comrex unit. But a Comrex unit costs $1,400 and FiendPhone is free. And we're actually in the process of doing an experiment where we've purchased and we got a used computer for $140 that's pretty fast. And we got a good new sound card for $45 on it. And we turned off auto updates, did a whole bunch of stuff to make it run faster, and put FiendPhone on it. And we're putting it at our radio studio coming up pretty soon here. And basically, it's going to allow Freedom Fiends hosts to directly connect to the network, even without me or Derek J, who are the two hosts that have a Comrex, and do shows. Basically, it's the proof of concept of so we have 14 co-hosts on this show. And for the 14 co-hosts to be able to do a show with the same quality as a Comrex without FiendPhone, you would need 14 Comrexes plus one for the network times $1,500. So anybody quick at math, $1,500 times $1,500. I'll do it real quick here. $1,500 times – there's people screaming at their radio. I have already done it in my head.
Right.
$1,500. $225.
Not a math person.
This can't be right. Yeah, it is. It's $2.25 million. So no way. I did 1,500 times 1,500. 1,500 times 15. All right. So we are basically replacing $22,500 worth of hardware with $200 worth of hardware. And that is going to change radio forever. Unfortunately, radio is on its way out. And that's going to be what we're going to talk about this whole show. And it's not really the fault of radio station owners. It's the fault of the government. and just, you know, new incoming technology. I mean, horse and buggy manufacturers weren't bad people for clinging to horse and buggy manufacturing when cars came out, but, you know, it was inevitable. And, you know, so we've actually come up with another technology after we tried the Namecoin thing, the Meowbit thing. We've come up with the Fiendphone, and it's actually getting adopted by a couple other podcasters. They're not all up and running with it yet, but a couple radio shows. So this is already getting more adoption than the other thing we did. But, you know, the thing is, there's a Dead Kennedys record called "Give Me Convenience or Give Me Death," mm-hmm. which is you know, his. His ANCOM minarchist view of most people who don't want to be involved in any kind of political change or working towards less government. He is a statist, but he was the guy that taught me to hate the government when I was 18, you know, in 64, 74, 84, in 1982. That's when I started listening to Dead Kennedys. And I learned to distrust the government. So, you know, that was an important part of my long-term development. Give me convenience.
Yeah, I would agree, too.
Most people, what? Give me convenience or give me death is what drives most people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, just about the broader Dead Kennedys point. When I started listening, when I was probably like 14 or so, that's what got me hating government. So,
And I don't really hate government now. I just want to be not a part of it. I want to be able to voluntarily leave it. I'm non-government. I'm not anti-government. A lot of people are anti-government. Mm-hmm. And I learned that from listening to another punk rock band, Minor Threat and Fugazi, and hanging out with Ian MacKaye and listening and watching what he did when I was in D.C. in the early 80s. You know, I interviewed him one time. He said... in the DIY or Die movie, you know, he said, like, I don't hate major labels. I'm not anti-major labels. I just want to create something better that works outside that system. Because major labels are boring and expensive, and their music's boring, and their records are expensive. So that's kind of my attitude with government. It's like, I'm not interested in destroying the state. I'm interested in, like, laughing while it collapses under its own weight and trying to build and encourage and promote other solutions outside of it that work better. And, well, you know, Fiendphone is one of them. And the BIPCOT no government license is one of them. So that's what we're doing. So what have you done, listeners? Anybody who complains? What have you done today? We're building the roads here on the Freedom Fiends. Most people would rather use Skype because give me convenience or give me death, even though it sounds worse.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends. Welcome to the Grandpa Butt Dial Show. And that's not me being crude. That's the name of this episode. So the opening rant, I just yelled a bunch about technology and how I'm building the roads and nobody loves me. You know, I'm just complaining. But no, actually, we really are building new technologies. Fiendphone can not only be used for one person speaking to another in high quality, it can actually be used for like one to many streaming in much higher quality with much lower latency than normal streaming. So basically it can replace radio. So I've replaced radio. The world's just waiting to catch up with me, with Derek Slopey and I. And the whole opening rant, like I brought up the premise of we're going to be talking about the sorry state of broadcast talk radio and where it's headed, which is to being completely replaced by government radio. And we'll talk about that a bit. And then I went on this whole rant about technology. And people may be scratching their heads listening. What's that got to do with anything? And it's like everything. Because technology is not only driving, you know, like it makes the mainstream media better and all the lies they feed you. And the left and right news that all they do is sit there and read, you know, press releases from the Pentagon and comment on how correct they are and praise people like the American Sniper. And, you know, I've heard in Florida they call him Christ Kyle. Have you heard that instead of Christ Kyle?
What?
That's what Tim told me. Tim told me that. But he's heard that.
I wouldn't be surprised. They act as if that's the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
They very much do.
Yeah. And, yeah. And
that is so sad.
I know. And we're to make it clear, we're not anti-gun and we're not anti-self-defense. We are not into the idea, though, of stealing a bunch of money from us at gunpoint in the form of taxes to fund ongoing police actions all over the world, America acting like the police. Here's the thing. I'm not praising people over there in the Middle East that do bad things. There are people that do bad things. But a lot of the anti-American sentiment over there, you know, Americans are brainwashed by the left and right mainstream media, which is basically just the mouthpiece of the Pentagon, to believe, oh, those people hate us for our freedoms over there. No, they hate America because America has been over there since World War I, occupying their territory. So most people who love the movie American Sniper probably also love the movie Red Dawn. I love the movie Red Dawn. And picture this. What's going on in the Middle East with a lot of those people over there? It's just Red Dawn in reverse. It's just, you know, what would you do if a foreign army came into your land, took over your stores, took over your government, ousted your mayor, and set up their soldiers on every street corner and checked your papers in your country when you walked down the street? That's what America's been doing over there since World War I, all over oil, basically. And, you know, now there are technologies for advanced, much, you know, non-combustion engine-based ways to run cars and run houses and run everything. But they're hiding it from you, man, because the people are entrenched in those systems and they don't want to get out of them. And I'm not saying I have a perpetual motion machine in my garage. I don't, and that doesn't exist. But there are ways to do things that have been blocked out by the huge money people that actually run the world. The presidents don't run the world. They are somebody, so they have bosses whose names you don't even know.
Yeah, and it's okay to be concerned with terrorism, but, you know, be sure to apply the terrorist label fairly and evenly. Chris Kyle is as much of a terrorist as, you know, people who bomb buildings, you know, over here, or attempt to bomb buildings, or, you know, the FBI gives them the bombs to bomb it or whatever. You know, let's apply the label fairly. You can dislike all people who inflict violence upon others.
Well, so. Yeah. I mean, and you probably just got us kicked off a couple of mainstream stations, and I don't really care because I love free speech and true free speech, and that was true free speech. And the definition of terrorism that comes from the U.S. government and is widely, in a widely accepted agreement, you know, the FBI definition of terrorism is something, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like, you know, people who inflict violence at random in public to cause terror in the general populace for a political end. And I threw in that part. That's the part about at random is not in there. It's people who commit violence on civilians for a political end. And, you know, most U.S. snipers over there would probably fit that definition. And
you know, according to Winston Churchill, that is exactly what the bombing of Dresden, Germany was.
Okay, here's
that's
the, here's
why
the
they
definition.
Bombed Dresden, Germany.
Here's the FD. Here's mm-hmm. the general definition of terrorism, the dictionary definition. Noun, the use of violence and intimidation in the pursuit of political aims. The FBI definition, I don't know. I don't even want to click on the FBI site, but it's pretty close to that. So yeah, the use of violence and intimidation in the pursuit of political aims. I would say every government ever does all that. One definition of it that's commonly accepted is the use of violence and intimidation in the pursuit of political aims by non-state actors. So basically, the only thing that makes Chris Kyle not a terrorist is that he's acting for a state. That's the little subtle twist that the government puts in the government's put in the government
so
definition.
So is ISIS, though.
Yeah, true, absolutely.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's BolaVPN at BOLEHVPN.net. Freedom Fiends. We're talking about the final days of radio. And, you know, it must be the final days of radio because they wouldn't let us on if it wasn't. They wouldn't. They would not have let us on in the heyday of radio, you know, in the 70s and 80s. Yeah, we came in through the back door while the people in charge of it were looting everything out the other back door. We came in and said, hey, we'll sit down at this microphone. Nobody else is using it. I've wanted to be on radio since I was a little kid. I've always been fascinated with radio. I've always been fascinated with talking outside of my town to the world. Like, when, you know, I'm 50. When I was a little kid, I built a little FM transmitter. This is before Mr. Microphone. I like soldered some transistors and capacitors and diodes together and a little electret microphone with some, you know, something I found in like Popular Electronics, a little schematic, and built a radio transmitter into the handset of an old telephone. And it transmitted about 100 yards. And it worked. I would walk around my neighborhood talking into it when I was like 11 or 12. My neighbors thought I was crazy. Oh, there's the Dean kid talking into a broken telephone. Isn't he too old to play games like that? But it didn't matter if anybody could actually did hear me. It was the fact that they could. Like, I've always been in the idea of like speaking into the void. Like the Freedom Fiends blog site, the tagline is yakking into the void. And another thing that was important to me was when I was a little kid, I put a message in a bottle and threw it into Lake Erie. And a couple weeks later, it had my address, and it said, if you find this, please write me a letter. And I got a letter back from a guy in Buffalo, like 70 miles away, who said he found it. And my dad thought that was so cool that he told the newspaper about it and did an article about it. And I was always in, like, you know, there used to be pen pals in the back of magazines, like, write to strangers, yeah, and they'll write to you. And I used to do that. And I got into ham radio when I was about 13 because we had a neighbor who had a ham, you know, he had this giant 50-foot antenna on top of his house, and he had postcards on his wall from people all over the world that had heard him. And that's something ham radio operators did and still do, is you know, send cue cards back. I think they're called cue cards. They write each other postcards after they've talked on the radio. And he had a map with dots of all over the world of people he'd talked to from his house. And I was like, that's so cool, man. This is before the internet. So when the internet came around, I jumped on it really early. Like, I was on Gopher at the San Francisco Public Library in 1991. I was on the web in early 1994 at a job. And I had DSL in my home in 1996. It was before most people did. You had to live within 1,000, you had to live in like one of six cities, and you had to live within 1,000 feet of a telephone company building. And I did. I happened to live in San Francisco on Bush Street near the telephone building. So I got DSL in 1996 and had a website and a domain of my own. I had a website in 1996 on like Earthlink URL. But then in early 1997, I got kittyfeet.com, and I still own that domain. It's changed from, you know, kind of a what I'm doing to it turned into a podcast that kind of turned into this show having many hosts. It's called Anarchy Gumbo. Ben's been on there a few times. It's retired, but it's still up. And so I've always been into like speaking to the world. And finally, at age 50, like my lifelong dream of having a daily talk radio show syndicated on a bunch of stations has happened. And it happened after we did it as a podcast for a couple of years. And I've been podcasting since 2006, but this show's been going since 2011. And I like reaching the world. I don't care about quantity of people reached. I care about the quality of what we put out there. We also share it on BitTorrent, and listeners who want to can go to freedomfiends.com and go click on the Torrent Club link and learn to share us on BitTorrent. So it gives it a lot better chance to like be around in 100 years, because I could get droned tomorrow. All of the hosts could get droned tomorrow. Our web server could get droned. And there's still like 50 or 60 people out there who have every episode we did and the ability to share them. It makes it drone proof. So I'm always interested in not only speaking to whoever's listening right now, but speaking to the future, speaking to the ages. And radio is kind of a neat way to do that, but it's kind of on its way out. And I really believe that the next president, whether it's Bush or Hillary, will probably vastly reduce free speech on AM and FM talk radio. And here's how I think they're going to do it. I don't think they're going to come out and say, we can't have free speech.
I think they're going to use something that's one of the criteria in the FCC regulations is that stations have to serve the community interest. That's in writing, and when you get an FCC radio license, you have to agree to that. And I believe they will determine that complaining about the government, whether it's right-wing neocons like Rush and Sean Hannity, or whether it's left-wing, you know, statists complaining about the Republicans, or whether it's the two shows that are actually voluntarist, Libertarian ANCAP, this show and Free Talk Live, I think that they will determine, the government will determine, that those do not serve the community interest. And they will probably move all those shows to the middle of the night when the stations have to power down, because if they don't, they reach too far because of the AM skip at night off the ionosphere. And there's less people awake listening, and there's only weirdos who don't like the government listening anyway late at night. So I think they will push us to the late night where there's a lot less, you know, you can't make as much money on there too. And people will stop doing it because they can't make money. And I think daytime talk radio will be entirely filled with, I think what they'll do is they'll have like radio classes in high school and college be like almost mandatory, or just like so fun. No, you know, like, you want to be on the radio? Okay. And they will have like college, high school, you know, juniors and seniors and sophomores doing the radio shows during the day. And what they will do is they will go around and interview their local government and police about why they need more money and more power. That's my theory.
I think they'll put trigger warnings on everything.
Trigger warnings. Oh, on everything we do. Yeah, what's a trigger warning?
A trigger warning basically is a warning at the beginning, usually of a piece of literature that says, this contains material that may be disturbing for sensitive people, and it'll say the types of things that may be disturbing. So it discusses some type of abuse or something like that. And the idea is that there are certain sensitive people who may be reading it, who've gone through traumatic experiences, and that reading through a piece of literature might trigger them and make them feel bad or kind of relive that experience that they've gone through. And you see it a lot used at colleges right now, and it's kind of almost trying to break out of the college scene, but it hasn't been very successful. But it is a pretty it's a disturbing trend.
So you think they'll put they'll mandate trigger warnings on the Freedom Fiends of warning, this show may cause ideas of independence and rebellion.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised if it got expanded to that. Yeah, I think probably anything, though, is at risk. I mean, if you discuss any kind of serious subject, trigger warning, war, you know.
Trigger warnings are square, man. Basically, most literature I've ever read and enjoyed, it would be a given that there should be trigger warnings on it if you think there should be trigger warnings.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't progress unless you are challenged in some kind of way. Literature is supposed to challenge you and make you and put you in uncomfortable positions.
Yeah, I mean,
help you consider a different worldview.
One of my favorite writers is Hubert Selby Jr., and you know, one of my favorite TV shows is Breaking Bad. Like, those would just be covered with like 8 trigger warnings on every chapter, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So I do think that they are on their way to chipping away at radio becoming an entirely statist thing, because it's kind of mind-blowing to me. And most people outside of America know who Rush Limbaugh is, but they don't realize how radical it is that in America you can still just absolutely like say horrible things about the government on the radio. You can't really do that anywhere else. I mean, it might be legal in the UK, but you'd never get on radio doing it. And like, it basically is it's the business model of talk radio now. Like, that's all talk radio is, pretty much, is people complaining about the government. But, you know, I've actually noticed a shift over the past 5 or 10 years with those mainstream dinosaurs, neocons, is they're kind of softening things so they don't sound as radical. Like, they're like, well, they used to say, like, you know, I hate Obama. I think he should go back to wherever he came from, and he's not an ethical president, and I want to see the birth certificate, and he's horrible, and he's a Nazi, and things like that. And now they say things like, I strongly disagree with his policies, and I think that his policies are ruining America, but you must respect the man, and you must respect the office. Like, what brain worm did they put in those people? Like, what kind of threat of economic, you know, maybe it's just advertiser problems, but they won't just come out and say, like, you know, even the man is horrible anymore. And it is all about policies, but
I think they're moving towards, as far as the neocons are going, I think they're moving towards the inevitable moment when they get back in control, and then they're going to be able to say, "Oh, but you have to respect the office." And any complaints about the next Bush or whoever, it's going to be like, "No, you're anti-American because you're complaining about the president." Well, what and were that, you doing when Obama was in there?
They don't want to sound unpaid. They don't want to sound unpatriotic.
Look, I've been saying this.
Yeah. And the other problem with radio is so much of the time when it does go local, it kind of gets, it's, if you want to say it in a nice way, you say, well, it's quaint.
The grandma butt dial show. Okay. Yeah. So I was listening, I check, we're on 35 stations and some of them have streaming links. And that's another complaint I have is that not all of them have streaming links. And part of it is because radio is an old technology and people who do it don't always do new technology well, but even the people that can put up a streaming link often are prevented from doing it because so many of the shows they carry start with these warnings of copyrights and, you know, they have these like 20 page contracts for reuse and we don't have that. You know, it's pretty easy to syndicate us and to drop us, for anybody listening that is offended by this. But, we're going to end up off radio and on internet, and we started on internet and we can go back to it, and we're working on ways on making internet better rather than just complaining about net neutrality like people are doing and should do. But, you know, we're actually offering technological solutions. But if you carry Major League Baseball or Rush Limbaugh on your talk radio station, you can't also stream that without like a whole bunch of other agreements and possibly payments. So it's like this intellectual property system is so square that it basically interferes with interstate commerce, which is like what they say the FBI exists to do, is to stop people from interfering with interstate commerce. But I would say all governments interfere with interstate commerce all the time anyway, as their mission statement. But, you know, they're trying, like, there is this old brick and mortar system where like only major corporations had the means of production and distribution. And, you know, people didn't have computers where they could talk to the world. Like everybody can talk to the world all day long now. So I really think that the one-to-many syndicated talk radio complaining about the government, but still loving the government, is a dying business plan. And it's still kicking, but so is a dinosaur when it's drowning in the tar pits. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends to talk about the Grandma Butt Dial Show. Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, there's some Squiskar Squig Elves from Death Clocks, and you are listening to The Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends. There will always be a market for media that consists of people talking. Spoken media is the oldest form of communication. It's the most primal form of communication. People like it. It can be kind of weird, though. I actually had someone today like add me on Facebook and be like, I've never talked to this guy. And he's like, man, I love your show. It's great to finally add you as a friend on here and have you as a real friend in real life instead of just a voice on the radio. And I'm like, I said, I'm not your friend. I have like 10 real friends in the world. You're not one of them. I'm glad you like the show, but you're sounding like a stalker. And he's like, maybe I am. And I said, I'm about to block you. You're creepy. And like 20, a bunch of my friends came out and they were like, man, this is creepy, Michael. I didn't believe you have to put up with this stuff. But, you know, I mean, talk media like influences people that much to where like they think you're their friend. You know, they used to say like on TV, like TV's like that too. Like, you know, the I Love Lucy show, like everybody in America was neighbors with Lucy and Desi. Like they would come into their home once a week. And, you know, mm-hmm. like people like Art Linkletter, like that they trusted for the news. They'd be like, you know, every night, Art Linkletter, their friend, would come over for dinner and tell them what was happening in the world. So I understand that. There's always going to be a market for that. And that's why the Freedom Fiends is a teaching hospital where I try to teach a bunch of people how to do talk media, how to do the technical aspects of it and make it great and have a good vibe with it. Because when talk radio is gone in a few years, as we know it, you know, internet talk media is going to be around forever. So we're still working on that. But Ben, we were listening to a show today, a streaming feed of a station we're on in some state of a show that's played delayed. It's not live. It's us from, you know, the previous week, best of show. And we're listening to it. And then as soon as it was over, this other thing came on that I called the Grandma Butt Dial Show and explained what we were listening to.
Yeah, and we should explain what a butt dial is, too, in case somebody doesn't know. I don't know how you wouldn't know that.
Everyone's had it happen to them, but they might not know the name for it.
So this is when your cell phone is in your pocket, assuming your back pocket, and you wiggle around or sit down or you do something. It doesn't matter what. It could even be in a vest pocket. But one way or the other, the phone accidentally, a button on it is pushed, and you end up dialing usually somebody on your frequently dialed list.
Or the last person you called sometimes. Yeah, like you hit redial something.
And so then the person receives that call and they hear you having a conversation with somebody because the phone's running and the mic is picking it up. And and the person who butt dialed cannot hear their phone has butt dialed.
And you're going, hello? And you recognize the voice and you're like, Ben, are you there? Ben! Right. And they don't hear you because it's in their pocket. But
it'd be embarrassing.
I've actually overheard someone talking smack about me when they butt dialed me.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. But so the Grandma Butt Dial Show was this local show of like this octogenarian woman. And I'm not saying anything, I'm not being ageist. I'm 50. Ben's 50 something. But she sounded like a grandma. And she was talking to a man who was about that age. And they were in a car and they were driving around their town pointing at things and saying, oh, that's used to be a Kentucky Fried Chicken and now it's a library. It sounded like they didn't know they were on radio and the audio was pretty bad. It sounded like it was coming over a cell phone. It sounded like someone had butt dialed the radio station and they'd put it on the air for an hour. It's weird, man.
And a lot of local radio is
butt dialed someone earlier.
Oh, really?
What's that?
Yeah.
I was going to say a lot of local radio is kind of like that. It's a homespun thing where somebody's talking about their, you know, their local experiences or the local restaurants or the local whatever and the local issues and whether or not the levy should go through. And it, you know, oftentimes it's poorly produced. It sounds horrible. It has a very narrow audience and it... You know, you have to ask yourself, does it have any importance in the world? Is it ever going to really do anything?
It might be the only thing radio is good for anymore, you know, when you think about it. In a global world where you could get better audio on the internet instantly anywhere, you know, I mean, here's an example, too. Like, my local radio station plays this show, but, you know, it's like kind of, I don't know if the transmitter's not tuned well or what, but, you know, like the antenna is old or something. But you can literally get this show like all over the state. I've heard my show. When we were coming back from Porkfest, I was listening to you, Ben, an hour delayed, from like 120 miles away. I could barely hear it, but I could hear that it was your voice. And when I got about 100 miles away, I could hear what you were saying. But I am 12 blocks from their antenna. We live in a one-story house. If we lived in a three-story house, I could see the antenna out my window. And on the radio, on my little portable radio here, it sounds staticky. I mean, that's radio, you know?
Yeah.
Why does someone want to do that when they can listen to the same thing? And, you know, this is like, we love radio. We love that stations have us on. We're just talking about where things are headed. We're not denigrating radio people. We like radio people. Radio people are weird and cool. I like them. But we'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, broadcasting from a windowless bunker in the Mountain West in the occupied states of America. This is hour two of our two-hour show. I am Mr. Michael Dean, talking to Mr. Ben Stoneback Baker and N.K. Lords. N.K. Lords, the Wolfram Panther. So we're talking about the death of radio on radio. I come here not to praise radio, but to bury it. No, I come here to praise it, too. I love radio. It's the coolest thing there is. It's been around for 100 years. For 70 or 80 years of that, it was the only way to, like, speak to the masses, that and TV. And it's still kind of the only thing that's independently owned. Like, there really aren't independent TV shows, independent TV stations, because TV costs so much more and the licensing is so much more and it's so much more complicated that people aren't willing to risk it to talk about real free speech stuff. And radio is kind of syndicated from a bunch of different sources anyway. So there's a lot more room to get real, slip some real truth in there in between the ads for snake oil and the demands that the next president will be a Republican and restore the Republic and just other specious things. So what do you guys think about the state of radio?
Well, you know, I was talking before the break about the little mom and pop shows and the quaint little, you know, sewing circle shows that are on and so forth. And all those do serve a local purpose. And that's kind of what we were making fun of. We had heard one
all,
of those.
I think that's all they're going to be around for still in a few years.
Yeah.
Other than praising the government.
If you realize, too, that cars are probably – people driving in their cars are probably the number one use of radio nowadays.
Yeah.
And, you know, because who listens to it in their house? So if cars are the number one use of radio, more and more cars now have
docking
essentially
stations.
The internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. They, more and more, they're having the internet in the car. So, you know, at some point in time, you're going to have iTunes or you're going to have all these other things available in your car. There's not going to be a reason to turn on the radio. At some point, I mean, it's only logical, they'll stop putting radios in automobiles.
Yeah. And, you know,
when that happens.
I got to say another thing, too. Like, I said before we went to the break that, like, you know, I'm not denigrating radio people. Radio people are cool and weird, and they really are. I talk to a lot of them all the time, and, you know, they're feisty and opinionated and strong, and a lot of them have, you know, a lot of them are interesting people. But running a mom and pop radio station has become so difficult because of the government that it a lot of them are going out of business that were thriving 5 or 10 years ago or teetering on it, you know, to the point where, like, they can't sell ads because the internet, you can advertise far more targeted. You know, like, if you live in New York City and you're a barbershop, you can pay X amount of money to put an ad on the radio for your barbershop and blanket shotgun style the whole city, or you can put an ad on like Google AdWords and only target people in that city who are looking for a haircut that day, you know? So yeah. It makes more sense. And like the amount of regulation and reporting that the FCC adds all the time, like new stuff, and the amount of like stuff with equal opportunity enforcement, you know, they have to like, to the point where like they will have to have, you know, a minority hired on the staff as an engineer, even if he's not as good, you know, there's kind of that thing of like affirmative action to where they can't hire the better person because they need to fill the racial quota. And to things where like they're taxing and regulating mom and pop businesses. And a lot of the stations that do talk radio, I mean, most of them have been bought up by two or three conglomerates that, you know, have made deals with senators to get the ability to consolidate like that. But then, you know, there's a bunch left, and we're on a bunch of them that are mom and pop people, like a couple or one person or a married couple or a group, small group of people own one station or three stations, you know, and they're usually not the 50,000 watt stations. They're usually the 1,000 or 5,000 watt stations. And those people are finding it harder and harder and harder because of the government, as well as because of the incoming technology, the internet. And you know, the internet's been around for 20, 25 years, but it's like, it is kind of incoming technology in the sense of like having it everywhere in cars and, you know, being able to replace radio with it.
Right. And a lot of times you see technology kind of outpacing regulations in a lot of ways. And I think that's why the internet has become such a haven of free speech and is outpacing radio and other forms of media, too, because government has had the time to cripple radio and, you know, keep it very difficult to get on the air because, you know, some of the same corporations own all the radio stations, things like that, you know, and you can't say certain things on the radio. There's less freedom. Yeah. In general, so it stifles the people who are, you know, just trying to make a living doing it and who have been generationally making a living too. Now they have to adapt to new modes of media like the internet. And I think radio is going to be around for a really long time. But since the internet has made it so easy for anyone to start a podcast or start their own form of media, it's really kind of democratized the media landscape. And it's good in a lot of ways. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of crap, I guess you could say, on the internet, but you do have that kind of freedom, and I'd much rather see that as a kind of standard for media, too. You know, more freedom, less regulation, and I think if radio could angle towards that, it might have a longer way of, or a longer lifespan, you know, if it merges with the internet and, you know, makes it more readily available, makes their content more readily available to internet users.
And radio is also broadcasting and internet is narrowcasting. I mean, you can have a podcast that has millions of listeners. They do exist. But in the sense that you kind of have to appeal to the lowest common denominator of a geographic region on radio. I mean, you can't, whereas on the internet, like people can find just what they want. They don't have to, you know, turn on the radio. Like in the average town, like the average medium-sized town, there's probably four or five radio stations. And if you are listening, if all you have in your car is a radio, you got to listen to one of them. So, you know, they'll have a cooking show. They'll have a right-wing, you know, pundit show. They'll probably have a car repair show. They'll probably have a health show. But they're not going to have a show that's like Linux programmers who are working on cryptocurrencies and like very technical language about it. Whereas a podcast, if you make that podcast about Linux programmers who are working on new cryptocurrencies, you know, there's probably 1,000 people in the world that are doing that, or 2,000 people in the world that are doing that. And they will all listen to your podcast and they'll all complain and tell you you're doing it wrong. But
I don't know if we covered this or not, but another problem that small-time radio station owners have is that a very slight, minor mistake can cost them thousands and thousands of dollars in fines.
I've talked to a lady who did that. Okay. So the government has determined for a really long time in their takeover of radio that you know, they need to be able to take over radio for emergencies, like say a hurricane's coming. They need to be able to warn everybody. And that's kind of not needed anymore. It's like, you know, whenever – if I'm listening to radio and I hear a warning for something, some emergency or some major news, like, you know, that they would break into the news for, you know, I've already seen it on my Twitter feed 20 minutes earlier before I hear it on the radio. But And, you know, the government now has taken over cell phones to where they can do that because they've realized that most people would get it quicker that way. You know, the reverse 911 thing, like they can do that on your cell phone. They don't do it much, but they can.
Right. And it's hard to turn off sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess that would make sense, not as something the government should do, but as something that would be a useful service for somebody to do before the internet. Like, you know, be able to tell you there's a tidal wave coming, get to higher ground, like take over the radio to do that. And they still do that sometimes. And it used to be done through the emergency broadcast system, which was the beep. And now it's been replaced by the EAS, the emergency alert system, which is basically just a more sophisticated method of doing that that can include, like, you know, that includes the thing on your cell phone as well as radios. But and they test it every once in a while. So here's the thing. When they went from the emergency broadcast system to the emergency alert system, they used to do the emergency broadcast system through like the syndicators. Now they do the emergency alert system through like a box that stations have to buy. And it costs, you know, $3,000 or $4,000. And they have to have it like plugged in and hooked up. And I was talking to a station owner who literally, like, okay, they had a lightning strike that damaged some of their equipment, but not that equipment. But they'd unplugged a bunch of stuff during the storm because they thought, you know, we don't want more stuff to get fried. And the next morning, you know, she'd been up all night trying to, like, literally bail water that was coming into her station. They were not a mile above sea level. They were pretty much at sea level. And, you know, she was trying to stay there saving her station physically. You know, she was exhausted at like 6 a.m. She went home to sleep a couple hours, came back at 9 a.m. and there was a guy from the FCC doing a spot inspection. He came in, he said, "Your emergency alert system box is unplugged," and he fined her $25,000.
Boom, just like that.
This is a 1,000 watt local station owned by a couple, a husband and wife, that $25,000 fine is the difference between them making a profit and them not making a profit at this point, you know,
probably for the year.
For the year.
Yeah.
And they do that all the time.
And it just goes to show you, I mean, that's a trait of the state. Like, it doesn't matter if what the service they're offering is irrelevant or not useful to you. They have to do it anyway just to retain that kind of control. Because, yeah, I mean, most people now, it's not really – I could see how it could have been a useful service at one time, but as technology grows and progresses, it becomes less relevant. So
the ironic thing about that story
– control thing.
The really ironic thing about that story is the emergency alert system did not give an alert for the storm that did that.
Oh, so it didn't even work.
Well, no, it would have worked, but they didn't see it as a big enough storm to bother sending that to that region for that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. Oh, wow. Yep. All right. Yeah. Well, that happens. That happens where I live too, because weather can kind of be sporadic sometimes. And sometimes you don't get a warning and there's a serious storm and it's like, oh yeah, you kind of need to get out of, you know, work or wherever you're at. So sometimes it doesn't always work.
Yeah, I live in Wyoming. The main thing that could happen here is that a volcano could erupt in Yellowstone and no warning would save me from that. It probably wouldn't save most of the Mountain West from that, actually. And then the rest of the United States would probably be covered in ash and be suffocating. So, yep.
Yeah, I started to say even a warning, you couldn't get far enough away fast enough from something like that.
Yeah, yep. Right.
So, you know, it's an old system that worked for a long time and it's still working a bit for a long time. And I like radio people and I feel for them with the amount of regulation and nickel and diming that the government is doing to them. I kind of almost wonder if it's like part of the plan, you know, of like the deals cut with the major players that own, you know, 80% of the stations, the three companies that do, if they basically are into the regulation to drive the mom and pops out so they have to sell, you know, sell their licenses.
Oh, yeah, regulatory capture. Yeah, yep. That's a thing.
Regulatory capture. All right, we'll be back with more about praising the beauty of radio and how it served a purpose well for many decades. Worms. On the Freedom Fiends on radio for at least a few more months.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, "You didn't build that"? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends on the radio with Michael W. Dean, me, Ben Stone, and MK Lord. Talking about stuff on the radio. Talking about radio on the radio.
It's very meta.
Yeah. And we're kind of talking, if somebody tuned in the first part of the hour, we were talking like really technical stuff about cryptocurrency and stuff like that. And then we were talking about butt dialing and how that works. And so we've kind of, you know, if you're listening to us for the first time on the radio and you're like, what are these people about? Well, this there's one of radio, our catchphrases.
This is what radio sounds like now.
Yeah. In a way, we're trying to salvage a thing that's kind of doomed. But, you know, we're doing the best we can with what we've got. We're trying to do as much as we can to talk to people on the radio and get this message out and, you know, and have fun doing it. I think one of the main things about the Freedom Fiends and that sets us apart, there's thousands of podcasts out there with liberty oriented or, you know, Bitcoin oriented or libertarian or political of different kinds. But the thing that really sets us apart and the thing that makes us different from all the rest is that our whole purpose is to have fun in it. Our whole purpose is to talk about stuff that interests us at this moment. So that's why we bounce from cryptocurrency to pocket dialing to, you know, grandma's sewing circle on the radio to whatever it is that we're going to talk about next. Hula hooping, yeah.
Hula hooping right now. Okay, not really. I can't do that in the space I'm set up at, but I always have a fun time. Well, and that's, you know, that's what's great about radio is like there are fun shows on there. I mean, when I did used to listen to radio, I mostly listened to NPR, and they actually have some pretty solid programming sometimes. It's pretty fun, and you know, I'd like to see more of that. I'm kind of more used to, you hear a lot more kind of talk radio, conservative talk radio stuff where I'm from, and that's great if you like to be angry, you know, if you like to just rage at the radio and just rage at you know, whoever they're raging at the time. But I don't know that it's always super productive, and, you know, I think there needs to be more weird stuff on the radio. You don't always hear different perspectives because of the corporate ownership. You hear a lot of the same stuff. You know, if it's a conservative station, they're going to be raging against Obama all the time. And if it's a more liberal station, they're going to be, you know, probably praising him or, you know, covering up a lot of, you know, the important details. So I think there needs to be, yeah, just more variety in general, like the internet. If the radio could become more like the internet, I think it might have a chance.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking right before the last break about, and I tried to slip this in. I think I got it in before the break started, that one of the problems that radio is facing, Michael referred to this, is that these corporate giants are swallowing up all the little mom and pop operations. And that's happening, you know, all over. Everybody very often complains, a lot of people complain about big companies like Walmart or whoever that are swallowing up the competition and they're making it hard for the little guys to succeed. But one of the reasons why this happens, whether we're talking about radio or we're talking about grocery stores or, you know, retail or whatever, there's a thing called regulatory capture. And it is an economic principle that guarantees that the bigger, more powerful companies will utilize government regulation to crush their smaller, weaker competition. So
people are trying to do it in Bitcoin too, but they're not going to succeed. Why, MK?
Oh, well, because there's so many other great technologies that are being worked on out there, and there's just so much more competition in the space because the government doesn't have their hands on things. It's very much a kind of Wild West right now, and that's a good thing in a lot of ways. You know, it's harder to build a monopoly. It's harder to, you know, brute force something that, you know, maybe the majority of people really want, but isn't necessarily the best technology, you know, the most efficient technology. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're trying to clamp down on the space right now through regulations, but it's definitely been a bit of a battle back and forth. So And it, you know, it's very hard to regulate too. Cryptocurrency and blockchain technology, some of these other things. The information's already out there and can be, you know, made. I mean, there's a million different directions things could go, and you can't regulate every facet of it.
That's the really nice thing about that, as opposed to the old styles of, you know, business models that we're accustomed to, where, you know, one company, only one company for years and years and years controlled the, you know, what's it, where you had those big, thick catalogs that would come to you in the mail. And there was like two or three companies and that you would have to order from, and all that's, you know, gone. Now you can just go on the internet and order literally anything you want. It broke it up like that. And I think that's,
anything you want, that's legal or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, it used to be that a media company was a series of brick and mortar buildings, and now it's a person with a laptop or even a thumb drive, you know?
Yeah.
It's too portable to stop it everywhere.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FiendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Freedom Fiends. So, you know, there's this big push from the government to rein in the Wild West of the internet recently. We called it the Wild West in the last segment, and it pretty much was for a long time. But it's become such a large percentage of most people's lives that the government really wants to have control on it. And they take that control the same way they do with everything else. You know, they take your gun rights and your privacy rights and your right to not be searched at a traffic stop. The same way, you know, by telling you there are terrorists and we have to watch out for them. And if you're a good patriotic American, you agree to give up your rights that you've had previously because we're looking for terrorists. And they do the same thing.
Or it's for the children.
Yeah, which is, you know, yeah, which is why they, you know, it's all the same thing. It's all the same lie.
Yeah.
And they're doing the same thing with the internet. They're saying there are cyber terrorists who will steal everything and reduce you to embers, smoking embers. And we need to take control of the internet to keep you safe. And the thing is, a little bit of smarts on your part and the free market of computer companies who run things a lot better than the government ever will when it comes to the internet are far better than letting the government take your privacy to try to give you a little bit of protection. And there was some founding father who said something, some founding slave owner who said something like, those who would have a little bit of protection. What is the quote? Do either of you know it? And who said it?
I think it was Franklin.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. No, you hang up. All right. So it was something to the effect of, you know, those who would give up, you know, privacy for a little bit of security deserve, but neither, or something like that. But it is true. You know, if you think, oh, well, we should be able to let the police go door to door if they need to, because we need to stop the terrorists. Like, I've seen people who say they love the Constitution and then say, you know, oh, well, of course the government should be able to read my email. I have nothing to hide. But that is
ridiculous. Some people are aggressively excited to do that too. It's very, very bizarre. I can't even describe it. It's almost like they revel in taking what they think is this kind of edgy position, but it's like the least edgy thing you can possibly imagine. Yeah. I was watching it was Kennedy's new show, and my friend Michael Malice was on there, and the other woman who was on with him was very pro, like, yeah, I want them spying on me. And she was like, to the point where you almost thought that maybe she wasn't that happy, that she just had to hide it though for television. Like, she was just so stoked about, yeah, I want them to spy on me, I've got nothing to hide. And it was just so
they want to throw open their legs and be polluted by the government with glee. Can I say that on radio? Okay, I'm paraphrasing Mr. Burns on The Simpsons. So that's on network TV, broadcast TV. So I can say it for children. So I can say it. So there's this push for net neutrality, which is this big lie. It's a bad thing being passed off as a good thing. It's basically the government saying we need to stop big corporations from being able to charge you more for traffic from their competitors. Like, basically saying, like, okay, if Time Warner Cable is your cable provider, your internet provider, and they offer a paid video service like Netflix, they can't charge Netflix more or slow them down for getting to you. Now, all this is, and the thing is too, like, the FCC is getting involved in the internet with this, and the FCC has no business in the internet if they ever had business in radio, because radio was limited number of bands, and it made sense in a minarchist way back in the day to say we need somebody to allocate these licenses. But with the internet, there is unlimited channels. Everybody has a channel on the internet, and there's pretty much almost unlimited bandwidth in a lot of ways. And you know, the government heavily regulates any kind of new technology or any kind of new startups that could put, you know, 10,000 times as much bandwidth on the same fiber, and that kind of stuff does exist, but it's not rolled out because they pretty much have a duopoly in every city. They have one or two internet cable providers in each city, no matter the size of the city. And the big companies like it that way because they get to be the companies. And so none of this protects the consumer. It only protects the corporations. And the head of the FCC has basically told the corporations, it was leaked, like, some emails he sent of, like, yeah, let's help me pass this net neutrality thing, and then you won't have to abide by it. So what kind of who are they wanting to regulate? You know, us.
Well, this is exactly like the Affordable Care Act. Just look at the name, net neutrality.
Yeah.
It's trying to imply that government is a neutral party in all of this, and they're absolutely not. Just in the same way that you didn't see a lot of the insurance companies coming out against the Affordable Care Act, because the way it was written benefited the corporations who already controlled the healthcare system.
Yeah.
So in the same way, that's all net neutrality is going to do, is it's going to just benefit the corporations who already own, you know, a lot of this. And, you know, maybe, you know, there's going to be some benefits for them and some government benefits too. But yeah, the people will end up losing.
And, you know, the way that this got sold to, like, young hipsters who are agreeing with this when they really shouldn't, and moreover got sold to, like, tech people and programmers, a lot of them are into this and they really should know better. The way it got sold was like rumors that were untrue, like, oh, net neutrality would mean that they, you know, your local telecom can't stop you from pirating movies over BitTorrent. Nothing is further from the truth. It'll make it much easier for them to stop that. You know, it does not increase any freedom. There's no freedom gain here. There's only government control. And last week, 2 weeks ago, I watched Obama for 5 minutes while I was channel flurping on TV, slurping, channel surfing. I was watching Obama address a bunch of Silicon Valley tech company heads. And the funny thing was, like, three or four of the big, like, a bunch of them didn't go. Like, Facebook didn't send anybody, Yahoo didn't send anybody, and I don't think Google sent anybody. So, like, basically, he was only speaking to the second and third tier. Like, the main players didn't show up. They didn't think it was important enough, or they boycotted it, basically. But he was, you know, reading from his teleprompter and telling jokes that are kind of tech savvy, like talking about Douglas Engelbart, the inventor of the mouse, and, you know, the guy who did the mother of all demos, it was called, in 1969, which really, like, was groundbreaking. I mean, he showed, like, it's a filmed demonstration he did at a college in 1969 of, like, networked computers in different cities, two computers networked with each other, like, with a graphical user interface, a mouse, a tree-like folder structure, video conferencing, text chatting, and hyperlinks, like things no one had ever seen before. Like, he showed six of those things that we all use every day in one demo in 1969. He mentioned that. He made some kind of butt-kissy jokes, like, you know, if Silicon Valley were a nation, it would be the richest nation in the world, and it would have a pretty good football team, which is like a reference to Santa Cruz or something. It was a really chirpy, butt-kissy. It was butt-kissy, but it was like, I will rule you, but I'm trying to have a beer with you. You know, that's right. how I took it. And it was,
paradox.
It was, let me finish this. This was the thing that made me write that license, the BIPCOT no-gov license, which FiendPhone has now released under. It's the license that says, it's not an open source license. We called it that one originally, but we were corrected and we can't really call it open source because open source doesn't restrict it from anybody. And we restrict it from governments. Governments are not allowed with our permission. They don't have our permission to use our software. And that's a first for any kind of license for software or media. And if you make books that are not software or movies, or you want to put this license on your media, we have one for media too. So go to bipcot.org, BIPCOT.org. And governments don't abide by their own rules or anybody else's rules, but I really like putting in writing that by violating the software agreement or media agreement, they are agreeing to be shamed in public in perpetuity without taking action or even comment. Like, they're not allowed to even have a comment on it. So go ahead, MK.
Yeah, so this is the paradox of the left. The left largely believes the corporations own the government. So how can the government, which is owned by the corporations, do anything to stop corporate power with regulations? Yeah. I mean, this is a serious problem. This is something I agree with the left on to some degree. You know, I think corporations are dangerous, but it's because of their collusion with government. It's because of that. What they use government regulation for is to stop competition. Yeah. And government uses it for, you know, control. So there's a lot of elements at play, and you can't trust that, especially leftists. I really don't get why they think that the government is going to stop anything the corporations do. It's, you know, it's a relationship between the two that is pretty well solidified.
The related fallacy from the right is believing that if you just get the right people in there, you can regulate the government with the government and roll it back. You know, that you can. There's only ever been one politician who actually believed in the Constitution who was in office in the U.S. at a federal level, and it was Ron Paul. He's my favorite government thug. He's my favorite statist. I still like the guy. But he's the only one, man. I mean, there's a couple. Go ahead.
There is a couple that, especially in history, if you go back, that have tried. Yeah. Oftentimes people mention Jefferson and they'll say, well, Jefferson was this
he
or that.
Owned people.
But as soon as he got.
Not a liberty guy, man. And
as soon as he got in power, he started violating the very things he had written against. So, you know, if these are the best examples you've got, government is never going to regulate government. Government is never going to draw in and self-control. And none of those things are the tendency of government. Government is always going to engulf and devour as much as it can. And big corporations are the same way. It's all kind of the same giant monster, really.
Welcome to Phlegmcast. That was our joke when we started recording this earlier, where we were getting ready for it. We'd been listening to the Grandma Butt Dial show, and Ben and I had just gotten up, and we're in our 50s, and you know, I've been sick for a couple days, and just in general, we're like, welcome to Phlegmcast with the Freedom Fiends. So anyway.
Clear your phlegm before doing the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we go to break here, we got about a minute and a half. You guys got any final statement on where you think the world is going with more regulation or less regulation? And do you think freedom will win in the end and why?
Go ahead, MK.
Man, that's hard to generalize on. Well, yeah, I don't know. I guess I go back and forth from pessimism and optimism. So, I mean, I don't know. What I think we're going to see more of is regulation, but in some of these articles I'm reading about net neutrality, this kind of lighter regulation, this push for so they bring out this hardcore scary regulation. They've done this with Bitcoin too, and then they're like, all these other people start calling for, well, we need regulation, but we just need lighter regulation. So it's like a bait and switch, you know? They're like, hey, here's the scary thing to scare you. It's not really what they want. It's not maybe as much control as they really want. So then these other people come in, oh, let's scale it back. So I think we're going to see we've already seen compromises on so many things when it comes to regulation. I think legalization is a good example of this. you know, legalization of medical or recreational cannabis. You know, the radical side has not won out. So
I got
it's
a,
not going to.
I got a prediction. I'll put money on this right now. I think that the Democrats are going to win the next presidential election because they're going to make marijuana the legalization the main thing. And it's the Republicans' fault for losing because they've been so against people being able to do what they want with their bodies for so long.
To Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. So it's the time for the redemption in the third act. You know, we were talking about net neutrality and we were talking about where the world's headed with regulation. I think it's headed toward more regulation all the time, but less compliance. And not just less compliance, but less people caring in any way whether they're being compliant with the millions of laws added every year. You know, Neem Avdadi and I used to joke that what they were going to do with the emergency alert system on cell phones is kind of put a 1984-style telescreen that just scrolls text that you can't make go away on your cell phone of all the text of every new law that's passed every day. So they can say, oh, you knew about the law. It was on your phone. You didn't read those constant streaming words. You're in violation. And then we realized like there would be too much text to display on a handheld screen. So really it would just be like a stock ticker of the names of all the new laws that are passed every day at the federal, state, local, county level. And all the regulations. I mean, a lot of things are done without even laws these days, like things with the EPA and the FCC. Like they're not laws that are enacted by Congress. They're just things that bureaucrats write down. And the collective hallucination says this is correct. But, you know, Nima said that he thought at one point that in the not too distant future, the government would be like MySpace. It's still around. It's still got 300 million users, but nobody's logged in for 5 or 6 years. And, you know, an example of that is like, we're on radio. We should care intensely what the FCC is doing. We're on the internet and live on the internet far more than we do on radio. And now that the FCC is trying to muddle with the internet, we should really care what the FCC is doing with net neutrality. I know that there was something that was supposed to be decided last week, you know, a few days ago, last week. I don't know what the decision was. I don't even care. I didn't pay attention to it. That is the way, that is one way to get the force of the beast of government off your back is to just not care. And, you know, another is to work with alternative technologies that route around the state and are such Wild West technologies that they move too quickly to be regulated until they're more powerful than the government. You know, did you see that thing, MK, that last year Bitcoin created more jobs than the government?
Oh, wow. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised at all. It's, I mean, it's growing so fast.
Yeah.
And yeah, there it's bringing more opportunities for people in ways that, you know, we don't even have, we didn't even have just a couple years ago. So, yeah, while I don't like to say technology is going to be our savior that'll fix all of the problems, I think it's very promising how much faster it's moving than government and how much, you know, regulations aren't going to be able to stop it.
Yeah. And technology is kind of an evening of the playing field between the giant lumbering dinosaur that eats humans that is every government and the humans themselves trying to run and hide or just get away or go somewhere where the monster can't get them. And there's literally nowhere on earth you can go where there's not government. Except maybe some places in the Middle East, but there are tribal governments that probably wouldn't welcome you showing up and saying, I've come for the liberty. You know, the people always say, if you don't love America, get out, move to Somalia. If you don't like regulation, move to Somalia, which is ridiculous because there is government in Somalia and there is regulation. And a lot of it is provided by the JSOC and the U.S. government and arming warlords. But the thing is, like, you can kind of, and I'm not saying like, oh, just close your eyes and pretend the state doesn't exist, but literally, like, you can kind of slip between the raindrops of tyranny in a lot of ways. And Bitcoin is one way. The things we're doing with FiendPhone are another way. The things we're doing with the BIPCOT license are another way. Things that are coming out on the blockchains, things that are coming out in all sorts of technology. Like, basically, I said it before, like, it used to be a company was a series of buildings and millions of dollars worth of equipment. And now a company is like anybody with their laptop anywhere in the world if they're smart enough. And that's really hard to like pin. And it used to be that, like, you know, a news organization was a giant building or a series of buildings. And now it's like Julian Assange with his laptop. You know, it's so slippery in a good way. It's so fluid. It's so liquid. Freedom, the ability to, you know, have freedom interacting with many, many, many other people in the world is so portable now that there's really no way for states to crack down on all of it. Silk Road got shut down, five more opened up, and they're bigger and harder to stop. Can't, you know, so whatever the government has, we have too. We just need to use our brains.
We're like yellow jackets coming from every direction,
yeah,
looking for freedom.
Yeah, and Reagan,
the government can't stop us all.
Reagan did not take down the wall. Blue jeans and Bruce Springsteen tape smuggled in brought down the wall because it made people want something that the government wouldn't let them have. Freedom, man. People want it.
And Brian Williams was not there.
And he wasn't. Was not. And freedom freedom can go through holes in walls, man. Especially now with the internet. They cannot stop us. We cannot be stopped. They are insignificant worms, and we have the truth on our side. Worms.
Worms.